Welcome to the Happy Hour. I'm your host, Tony Yang. And joining me today are my usual compatriots, Clark Price and Alex Cortez, with a special hi to Jamie Raba, who is joining us today. I figured it would be a good idea to have a little attorney on here to talk about some of the legal matters with it. Not that you're a specialist in it, Jamie, but at least you can kind of give us some guidance on some of these materials. So thanks for joining us. How are you gentlemen doing today?
I'm doing well, and I want to point out that Jamie is not little.
Jamie's not little. Clark, how are you doing today?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I testified. I was a victim of a theft by a guy who's stolen a number of items, and I really feel bad. I'm not up on the witness stand, and my words are putting this person in taking his freedom away. And that is something I don't take lightly, and I feel a sense of responsibility about it, and I know that there is justice to it, but he has a family, and anyway, so there's in the pursuit of justice, the issues aren't always black and white, and my subjective role in this is that I really wish that he hadn't stolen from me. But I feel a sense of gravity in participating in such a major change in this person's life. So, I'm working with detectives, and with me is a retired police detective who had 3 major thefts from this person, and he's like, "What the hell are you talking about? We got him, and he needs to go to jail." And then I also asked the detective working with me. I'm going on a bit. I'll finish it up. I asked him, I said, "Did this guy just make a few mistakes kind of in an anomalous way, or is he a real criminal?" He's a real criminal. So, well, anyway, I guess I'm truly a bleeding, that's bleeding heart stuff right there. So anyway, on to the subjects of the show in which I'm going to be.
I think that's actually a good segue to the news du jour, right? Because here we have the news du jour, the FBI raided Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home.
I don't feel bad about that.
I don't think you should feel bad about that. But, he's his claim is like, this is so unfair. It doesn't fit the crime. It's 15 boxes of materials. These are harmless documents. So I don't know. Alex, your thought. And then I want to get Jamie back in here to talk about, what are some of the ramifications of this? So Alex, your thoughts.
If I could let out an evil cackle right now, I would. But I feel like there's a sense of justice. I mean, it's only an investigation and only like some boxes. I mean, nothing, no slam dunk on anything, but I mean, it feels like the karmatic scales have given us a doozy. So, giving me a doozy, I would say. I think it's good. I'm surprised this didn't happen earlier. Granted, all the speculation around this individual. And it's also really funny to see the reactions. They seem to forget how riled up they were with back when they were investigating Hillary or trying to investigate her. So in your face moment for me.
Jamie, your thoughts?
Well, this certainly isn't my area of expertise, but I did find it somewhat interesting, both in terms of timing and also, you know, sort of the speculation about what is actually at issue. But yeah, it's pretty late in the game, so I'm just very curious about the timing.
I mean, my perspective on this is that we don't know what they found. We still don't know what they were looking for. I mean, we presume it's these 15 documents, but it could be any variety of sort of things that they have the warrant for. Because one of the interesting things that Donald Trump didn't do, even though he told everybody the FBI was raiding his house and conducting a search warrant, is he didn't actually show the affidavit and the actual warrant, which said that what exactly they were looking for. So there certainly was some care and thought given to information that's
coming. Well, we know he has a track record of not producing required legal documents.
Right. I mean, that's a huge problem, and Lord knows what's there.
One interesting thing about this was the scale of the operation. It looks like they sent as many as about 100 agents over with some of the more advanced hardware that they have. Also, you know, one thing to muse about is the fact that some magistrate had to issue, you know, this warrant. And essentially, you know, since this is against a former president of the United States, you know, it's just, it probably, there was a lot of detail and a lot of analysis that went into it. So, you know, it probably was not nothing. Whatever the allegations were, they were probably pretty serious, because if it was even close, they'd probably say no. Probably say, you know, separation of powers, et cetera. Don't want to go there.
These are very astute observations, Jamie. Excellent contribution.
Thank you.
You said something, this is Clark. You said something earlier. You said it's late in the game. And this is my sense is that Garland has been very, very late, that a lot of this stuff was known. So there's been, it seems to me, trepidation because this is the president and because it's unprecedented and because there is a potential fear of civil unrest as a result or a reaction to going after the president and the political consequence. I mean, this is a guy who tried to overthrow the United States government by getting a mob going, and it almost happened. So I'm curious as to why you say late in the game. Is it similar to why I'm thinking?
Well, you know, it's sort of like when things are fresher, it's a little easier to get better information. And that's not to say that there haven't been investigations that we don't know about and amazing evidence gathered. But, you know, we are late in the administration. You know, if there is going to be criminal prosecution or, you know, some kind of official inquiry, you know, one is not sure how much longer, you know, Merrick Garland will be at the helm, because we don't know who the next administration is going to be. There may be some continuity there, but I think these things are going to play out somewhat slowly, if how we got to this moment is any indicator.
Well, Biden has 2 years and 3 months remaining.
Right.
So that's some time, but it could be that if the Republicans retake Congress, that they will impeach and harass and stall will be given the delightful experience of hearing the voice of Jim Jordan's constant insane harangues and them the rest of them. So it's possible they will impede, but I doubt that they can stop if something's right. coming. I doubt they can stop it from coming.
And if, you know, if the president is indicted and it's not just people in his orbit, but if the president, the former president, is indicted, I assume he would not assert his right to a speedy trial. So I think it might take a while. Well, I mean, I don't know if he's ever been criminally prosecuted before. I mean, some of his organizations have come under criminal scrutiny, but this may be, you know, a personal issue. Although, again, a lot of speculation here. You know, there certainly may be some organizational criminal liability that is being investigated as well. The interesting thing about the former president is he often has people doing things for him, although documents in the toilet seem to be the one thing that just popped into the news today.
That's been in the news previously. That's been out previously.
Well, right. It has been alleged, but I don't know that there was photographic evidence of it until today or yesterday, whenever that news story came out.
I think it was yesterday.
Yeah. So, you know, that maybe puts some issues, especially if this is about evidence or really important documents. That really is an interesting potential current event that may have some relevance.
Alex, your thought about potentially having national security secrets in Mar-a-Lago, you know, where foreign agents, you know, can have access to them. I mean, sort of the dangers of all that, Alex.
That wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think we should rethink there need to be stricter protocols for and maybe consequences of deviating from any of that. I mean, this is not the only time this potentially happens in this world where information can get out pretty easily. They need to figure out a better way to find places where house the information where it doesn't go beyond that, and consequences if you do. I don't know that is in play and how it's enforced, but do we have to wait for a bad situation to occur, which is a leak to a foreign group or entity?
Well, I think we already have a very.
But with this,
go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, but I was going to say with this particular case, I mean, is it really surprising? I mean, he's given his close association with Putin all these years. Would you be shocked if he's got information and, you know, somebody that is not safeguarding the best interest of the United States is able to access that information just by where it's located and that kind of access?
No, I agree with you, Alex. I think we're just headed into a dangerous situation just by the fact that the FBI raided Mar-a-Lago. Because if you've been watching any of the right-wing reports that have been kind of coming out, the people have been watching it. And Clark, we want to get your opinion since you're avid watcher of the right wing, not a consumer, but someone who keeps an eye on them. This incident has prompted the Three Percenters, the Oath Keepers, God knows what else, what other right wing group to really sort of begin to mobilize to try and defend Trump. You just need to take a look at the response of the Republican Party. You know, Kevin McCarthy's out there trying to abscond with Trump and, you know, condone the actions of the FBI. This is unheard of. The Republican Party condemning the FBI?
Their names are on the list.
Well, I mean, we'll get to that when we talk about. Go ahead, Alex. Go continue that point.
I'm going to say, if they're that riled up about it, it's either just blind allegiance, which, you know, I wouldn't put it past them, or because, you know, their own interests are threatened and they're going to be linked to this. What's going to come out from there?
It can't be anything good. Clark, your thoughts?
The greatest threat to the United States is domestic terrorism, and these Trump supporters who are threatening violence are exactly the source of the same source as domestic terrorism would emerge from. And you saw them on January 6th. You've seen them threaten the governor of Michigan with kidnapping and on and on and on. And this is a line of militias and right extreme right wingers. It goes back decades, and it just goes back again and again to the Bible of the right wing, which is the Turner Diaries. And you saw the Day of the Rope being enacted. The Turner Diaries were being put into action on January 6th. And so you have people, what Trump has done is to activate and radicalize the Republican Party, and the worst elements of the Republican Party and the far right in this country have taken over the Republican Party to threaten to influence the government and affect the enemies of Trump and their perceived enemies generally with violence. And my thinking is, this is a very bad development, but it is a development that was inevitable when you had the Republican Party over the last more than a decade making it illegal for the federal government to investigate the right wing in this country, completely focusing on Islamic terrorism, which is close to negligible now, and the killing of Zawahiri, I think, really is putting a nail into that coffin, maybe literally. So the thing is all about the right wing, and I think anyone threatening the government or people within the government with violence should be dealt with in the harshest possible way. And if they want to threaten the government and the people that comprise the government, then the consequences need to be brought forward. And by whatever means necessary, domestic terrorism must be quelled.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, you already see the intimidation coming out. There are right-wing protesters targeting federal judges as we speak. We have them, streaming to Mar-a-Lago to defend the president. And so it is extremely disturbing, I think.
I have some speculation about what would have motivated this FBI action. And I think Jamie's absolutely right when he talks about the kind of precision and clarity extensive. I'm sure it's very thorough. It's an airtight case, and they made sure it was before they went in. And you know it is because Trump has said this wasn't necessary. It's wrong. It was outrageous, et cetera, et cetera. But he has not published what they've taken. And he has not, or he has not published the warrant either. And the reason is that it would be devastating to him to show that he, when he says it was not necessary for them to do this, that he did have these documents in his hands. So Jamie said earlier that they had to be significant because otherwise they could just let it go. So what would be significant? And then Alex mentioned earlier the strange connection between Putin and Trump, all the Russian connections, including someone working directly with Donald Trump, who was directly in contact with Putin. And that person's name is Felix Sater. But what he may have is information about people who are close to Putin. Remember all the intel we were getting about what the Russians were doing. And that Biden was actually just coming out with some things. Now, sources and methods might have been NSA, probably eavesdropping, but it's not impossible that we have people in the inner circle of the Kremlin. And those people would be very interesting to Vladimir Putin. It'd be a very valuable set of information. So something like that, where people who have helped the United States in Russia, maybe even to the extent of knowledge about the nuclear arsenal, life and death, existential issues, documents like that in the hands of this absolute sleazebag would be would motivate me to say, go in there and get them and do a thorough job, because you're not going to have a second bite at that apple. In fact, I think this action is a real crossing of the Rubicon. And now I think time is of the essence to hit him with everything you can. Bring all of your cases forward, because he's going to be burning and destroying evidence everywhere he can. He's an actual criminal who actually behaves like a criminal. His motivations are similar, if not the same. He's compared himself in a recent book to Adolf Hitler and said, why aren't you generals loyal to me the way you were to Hitler? And one of them, Kelly, I think, says, yeah, well, his generals tried to assassinate him three times.
They got pretty close.
And they almost did. But the point is, Trump is comparing himself to Hitler. And these things should not be simply set aside as, oh, well, he's just joking around. Now, this guy is a very, very dangerous man. One of the worst human beings the United States has ever produced was there in the presidency. And then he tried to turn the United States into his vassal empire, which he could just become the ultimate kleptocrat, steal everything, control everything, ruin the lives of everyone in this country. This is not a trivial thing and needs to be prosecuted and punished for the good, not only of this country and its children and off into the distant future, but for the whole world. Because should that guy have taken over, he would have been a menace to the world.
There's no question about that. But also turning to more justice actually happening, and this is my opinion.
Well, why don't we get Jamie's response to my hysterical ranting?
Yeah, you're ranting.
Well,
he has to be more nuanced. He has to be more nuanced. He's an attorney.
Well, I don't, you know, I think the kind of behavior we've seen over the years has been rather concerning, both from a legal perspective, but also from a leadership perspective. But speaking of, you know, the former president, he very importantly was not at home when the search warrant was executed. So I think he was still in New York. And I think it's probably a really good thing, because could you imagine a confrontation between the former president and the FBI? So I think this was sort of this was a perfect moment to sort of execute this without truly exacerbating the situation and setting off what would be a firestorm, because I mean, what would they do? Handcuff him while they search the property? I mean, isn't that what they normally do?
Well, yeah, that might have really ticked off the right wing. Maybe it was played, you know, correctly, as you said, Jamie. But I think also speaking to some other issues this week, Jamie, Alex Jones's defamation lawsuit. No, was it a defamation or was it a libel lawsuit? I'm not quite correct on that one. I think it was a libel lawsuit, where he has been denying that he made misstatements about the Sandy Hook killings. And in the case, I thought it had a dramatic ending. He had already been found guilty because they hadn't produced any of the records. And so the hearing and the trial really was about the punitive damages that came from that. But there was one interesting aspect of that, of the closing statements of the trial that occurred. And, you know, that's why we have Jamie here for us to talk about it. But in legal discovery, it was revealed that Alex Jones's attorney turned over all his cell phone records for the last 2 years to opposing counsel without realizing it.
It was a full digital copy of his cell phone.
Well, I think it went beyond that. There's 385 gigabytes of data that was mistakenly handed over to.
Well, is that actually a mistake? Isn't that part of the discovery process?
We'll have Jamie explain it.
And Jones lied about it. He said, I don't have any of my texts.
Right.
He lied about it.
Right. I mean, it is not unusual to provide large volumes of discovery in a large case. Cell phones can be pretty big these days. I mean, if you had, you know, some cell phones are, you know, well, how many gigabytes did you say that was, though?
It was like about 385 gigabytes worth of data that they have.
Well, I mean, maybe with an SD card. Query whether his phone supports that. But yeah, that's quite a large amount of data. I don't know too much about the actual data itself, but I do understand that the occasion to encounter this very large repository of cell phone information came when the paralegal from the defense firm was intending to send something else, were given to understand, and instead served what is, I think, a forensic image of the cell phone or some kind of large image. Now, a couple things about these images. Because it's in potentially a proprietary format, you don't know exactly what you're sending because you can't just peek inside it and look. But it was a very large item. So anyone who is experienced with large volumes of data probably would kind of know what to look for, and the fact that this is probably much larger than anything they intended to send. If you have really, really, really fast internet, though, it can sort of eliminate the difference, because most of the time you notice the difference when you're waiting for something to finish uploading. But apparently they realized their error in sending it, but instead of invoking a rule under Texas law, I don't know Texas law as I'm not a Texas lawyer, but I do understand there is a rule in Texas law that you have 10 days to request potentially privileged information that you inadvertently transmitted back. But that's not what happened. Apparently, defense counsel simply said, please disregard the transmittal. They didn't demand it back. So, you know, they argued when they asked the judge to exclude all that evidence that, you know, their please disregard message was in fact a legal demand to get their data back, you know, that it might be potentially privileged. But let's talk about it for a second. Most of what's on a cell phone is not privileged, right? Generally.
This is a good lesson for all the students out there, by the way.
Right. You know, so there's some argument that the actual container, you know, was intended to be, you know, was a privileged communication to an attorney. But you can't just shield something by giving it to your lawyer. Otherwise, everyone would just give all their secrets to their lawyers. You know, Rudy Giuliani.
Right. Right.
Everything comes full circle. So, you know, you can get in litigation anything that's relevant and not privileged or, you know, protected by a similar statute, you know, such as work product or maybe sensitive business information. You know, there's certain things you can get protective orders to prevent from being disclosed. But if it is relevant, you know, the other side is entitled to it. And there's no rule against producing more than what's relevant as long as you're not trying to harass the other side. So there's nothing per se wrong with producing an entire cache of cell phone data, especially because the other side very much would like to see that. But there probably were some privileged things on there. I mean, you know, someone like Alex Jones is very likely communicating with their legal counsel. A lot of states, including California, have really strong spousal privileges as well. So spousal communications generally are pretty shielded, and you know, normally you wouldn't turn those sorts of things over, especially in a civil trial. So, yeah, there are a bunch of privileges. I don't know if those particular privileges, like spousal privilege, applies in Texas, but essentially, it is a very interesting thing that happened. Mistakes happen all the time in litigation. You know, the pace of it, the sheer volume of data, the pressure, the time pressure to send things over.
I mean, Jamie, here's the question, though. Like, the problem, I think, was that they contended throughout.
This is a pretty big mistake.
Right? but the whole problem was they contended throughout the course of the discovery process, these things didn't exist. No, in fact, they did exist. They just weren't turned over.
Right. And, you know, usually it works better if things don't exist. You know, sort of the Brett Favre sort of situation where, like, oops, my phone fell in the lake.
Yeah.
You know, oops, it fell in the lake. So weird.
Oh, and just a correction, it was 2.3 gigabytes on the phone, which is not a, you know, in terms of text, that's a lot of data.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, with the big iPhones you have these days, yeah, you know, it's not that's bad. Just a couple pictures.
It ended up being a big mistake. And, you know, Alex Jones was under withering cross-examination, being called out for it. And of course, the subsequent judgment was $4.2 million, I believe, in damages. But then also, I believe 42, or someone can correct me on that number, another $42 million in punitive damages, which will probably get litigated further in court. But part of the reason why the settlement was as small as it was there are other ongoing lawsuits with that as well. And probably the biggest consequence of this, particularly these phone records, is now the January 6th committee is now looking into these phone messages and what role Alex Jones may have played on the assault on the Capitol. But I do want to insert one rather superfluous note that was included in these records, and only because it relates, I think, to January 6th and Donald Trump. One of the more salacious bits of information to come out from this was an intimate communication between with Roger Stone, where Alex Jones, apparently, and this has been verified, sent a picture of his naked wife to Roger Stone. So I don't know about you. I think my wife would be filing for divorce if I ever did something like that.
Well, incidentally, you said it just now, but all of these people are the rogues gallery that really pushed for January 6th to take place. And if you look at who they are, Alex Jones, a huge con artist, confabulator, cruel liar regarding the families of the Sandy Hook victims, a monster, really. Also, he conned an elderly woman to provide the funds that funded the January 6th event from which the mob was incited. That's Alex Jones. He's all over the place with the bad guys. And Roger Stone, he's one of the worst. This is like the worst of not only America, but these are some of the worst people in the world. And they all congealed together around Donald Trump because they recognize each other. And Stone and Alex Jones are sending each other dirty pictures is somehow just exactly what these guys would do. And their followers, the people that they conned, I'm sure they regard them as absolute idiots and think that there's an endless supply of them. And it's just very...
Alex, how about your thoughts on this? We haven't heard from you in a while.
What specifically? About
the insanity of all of this. I mean...
About how absurd this is?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's consistent. It tracks with it.
Yeah.
So I'm with Clark on this one.
Well, no, like, I mean that's
what doesn't surprise me. I mean, they're a weird bunch of people.
Yeah, I mean, it strikes me as something deeply wrong with America at this moment, and I don't know what that is, Alex.
It's called Donald Trump.
Well,
yeah, I mean, and the funny thing is they can get away with it because they hide behind the veil of patriotism and righteousness and, oh, we're the moral authority, we're Christian. So they flaunt it, I think, is sort of as a way to, I don't know if it convinces, who they're trying to convince, maybe they're trying to convince themselves that they're actually not deeply flawed individuals with some real problems that, and they're bad people. I mean, they're.
Well, yeah. I mean, what should we do with these bad people, though, Alex? I mean, I don't know. I'm deeply concerned as well, Alex, of that. But I'm also really concerned, too, about the blowback. I'm not saying that we don't do anything. I think we have to endure it. But there's going to be chaos the moment they indict Trump, don't you think?
Yeah, but what's the alternative? Let him keep getting away with it?
Right, right. We have no choice but to endure it and to go through with the legal procedures, because we are a nation of laws, because we are a nation that is governed by the rule of law. And I think we just have to do it. But I think it's really hard for some people to sort of cross that barrier and to say we have to do this democracy.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the term barrier, because by how extreme that the right has gotten, it's sort of relying on this acting on good faith that, you know, law is gonna, you know, things will take care of themselves, let's operate under good faith. It's not working. I mean, they keep pushing the barrier further away. So at what point are we just going to be gone too far? And I think we're getting pretty close to it. I mean, January 6th was not any indication of that. There needs to be some serious consequences for that.
Yeah,
I think the thing we need to worry about the most is that right now there is somewhat of a continuum where I think everybody tends to lump together everyone who once supported Donald Trump with, you know, the January 6th insurrectionists. And, you know, there's sort of like the slippery slope of, well, you know, you greedy bastard, you voted for Trump because you wanted your taxes cheaper, but look at what it got you and look at all the evil it brought on the world. And so, you know, you sort of marginalize a group of people who tend to vote one way. And, you know, what you really want is a clean break from Trump. You want the extreme primary voters, right? You know, everybody has these rather extreme positions, you know, and then when it comes to the general election, everybody comes back down to earth and then all of this. And,
well, yeah, but know, but we may, I think we might be
positions come out, so we're kind of losing that, right?
Well, I think, you know, there was a little bit of where you dropped out there.
Is there mainstream anymore?
Jamie, you're trying to appeal to rational Republicans, and I just don't think there are rational Republicans. Just take a look at what Kevin McCarthy did. He came out and defended it. Marco Rubio came out and defended it.
These are people from districts where they can basically run the same campaign in a primary as in the general election, right?
No, but I'm talking about Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio doesn't have to do that. Marco Rubio could be a much more of a moderate. He's in Florida.
Sure.
Right. But he's not doing that.
But also, because he's in Florida, he also doesn't need to be a centrist, and he can be as crazy as he wants to be.
He doesn't have to be, but he is.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, most people aren't extremists. But I think we need to sort of build a coalition of centrists. And I think we need to forgive people for voting for Trump.
Well, I'm willing to do that if you join the club now. There's going to be a point where it's unforgivable, right?
Right. But I mean, no one's saying that.
Well, we're getting pretty close. I don't know about that. We're getting pretty close. But I think to your point, Jamie, that there is a lot more. The Republican Party, quite frankly, on its primary platform and its, you know, enthrallment with Trump is clearly too far for the nation. Because the other big
thing, I mean, the party's broken, that's for sure.
But the other piece of news is just look at what happened in Kansas. When put to the vote, 60% of Kansans voted to retain the right to pregnancy. This is not a state legislature doing it. It's not a state court doing it. It is the people saying, no, we want to keep abortion up to 22 weeks in Kansas. And so that was a little bit of a shock to me. I don't know if it was a shock to you three, but Alex, you know, we'll start with you. I mean, how did you read that one, and how did that affect you? I mean, I'm sure you were as shocked as I was. Kansas voted 60-40 to keep in place abort.
Yeah, I mean, it's what I hoped for, but not what I expected, and certainly was fearing. But I think this is a good transition in topics, because it is very much speaking to Jamie's point. I think I don't think the people that are on the right are all, there's a spectrum.
Right.
The problem that I think that we've seen recently is just, there is no, I guess, exit strategy, or I think we've commented on this on the show, on how the Republican Party has pretty much become a death cult, when they're kind of going all in, or at least that's what the messaging that's going out, but in reality it isn't, and I think that. The case in Kansas is testament or evidence of that.
I agree. I was really heartened by it. That plus the recent Democratic polling has been very good. You know, Jamie, if you take a look, Warnock's ahead in Georgia. Tim Ryan is ahead in Ohio. Ron Johnson loses to a bevy of different Democratic candidates. My guy, John Fetterman, is up 11 points against Dr. Oz. So it looks like the Democrats are actually ready to take a few more seats in the Senate. Additionally, the Inflation Reduction Act, this was Biden's Build Back Better plan, a last-minute switch by Joe Manchin, and Kristen Sinema, who still have their flaws, but they decided to vote for the package, made it a very interesting week for Joe Biden, I thought. And it is not coincidental. I'm going to quote and paraphrase a Trevor Noah joke. Joe Biden seems best when he's isolated in a bunker or in the basement. Because remember when the campaign stopped and he started campaigning from the basement in 2020, he won the nomination and then became president. And Joe Biden getting COVID and being isolated for 18 days, you know, his presidency has recovered somewhat by actually getting things down. Not to mention gas prices are coming down. So I'm going to leave it there. Jamie, Clark, thoughts on Joe Biden potentially experiencing a mini renaissance of sorts,
I have a comment about the Supreme Court. I think the Supreme Court, you have these ideologues who have been selected by a process governed by Leonard Leo, who runs the Federalist Society. Federalist Society is very well financed, and they're looking for people who have ostensible legal credentials. They're well educated and from our finest schools, which I think, as Robert Reich has recently pointed out in an article on, here are all these people like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and so on, who have come from our finest educational institutions, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, and they come out as just bags of moral turpitude and stupidity and craven immorality as they seek a power by saying and doing anything. So they're just morally bankrupt. Well, in the Supreme Court, I think the process of the right wing to put people in who will not grow in depth in their lifetime appointments, they will not grow in wisdom. They are stuck in an ideology. They're looking for people who are highly insular. And what you get are people like, what's his name? The guy that authored the
Alito?
Alito, of course, yes. the guy who said that Citizens United was not going to open the door to corruption and international money in our elections. That guy writes an opinion, allegedly an originalist opinion, where he's talking about what the witch finders of Salem were thinking about abortion. And it turns out he's just completely historically wrong about everything. So by his own standards, he's just wrong. Well, anyway, the point is that they're all ideologues. That's what the Federalist Society wants. And so for one reason or another, they're not going to change their views. That's what they want. So it's in the case of when you have right-wing Catholics, they are a pretty good bet. And so you've got six of them on the court. That's what the Federalist Society put on the court.
Well, I mean, I think they're a reflection of the Republican Party right now. I mean, all they care about is
they help shape it. Yeah. This is the but here's I have a very wise woman who's actually a feminist and an activist in this very field. And she told me, Clark, no matter how much you fail, how much you succeed, never, ever believe your own hype. What has happened is that these guys believe their own hype. The judges that supported that decision to overturn Roe v. Wade actually think that the garbage that flows through their brain is what people really want.
Well, that's why I think to bring it back full circle, it'll be very interesting to know what who Alex Jones reached out to on January 6th, because it may have been very well Clarence Thomas's wife, Jeannie Thomas, because we know she's a true believer in all of this as well. We're running a little bit out of time. We got about 3 or 4 minutes. So as usual for our show, we try to end it with one good thing. So keep in mind, what's your one good thing? And my one good thing this week is I bought a new electric bike. And so I am now reducing my carbon footprint with my commute. So I'm really excited about that. It's a nice ride. I encourage people to invest in that. I'm a little disappointed that electric bikes did not make it into the Inflation Reduction Act, but that's okay. I can live with that. So that's my one good thing.
Congrats on your acquisition.
I know. Thank you. Who's that? Who
wants to go next? Alex?
I guess I'll go since I commented last. I actually just found out today, and I think the news just broke, my good friend and UCR supporter, UCR alumna, former board member, Sabrina Cervantes, Assemblywoman Cervantes, is the new chair of the Latino Caucus. So that's really good news. And
congrats,
I think it also helps highlight how much good political force there is in the Inland Empire in this region. So,
yeah.
Day for us.
Jamie, you're one good thing.
Well, you know, mine's going to sound highly derivative, but I just got a folding bike.
Ooh, okay.
Not electric. And so, you know, I'm reducing my carbon footprint.
Is it a turn or, you know, is it a brand name or what is it?
I think it's called like Zippo or something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, it's somewhat derivative. I still like my folding bike. I ride one fairly regularly too. Clark, you're one good thing.
Well, Jamie, finish what you're saying.
Well, I was just going to say, I had the bike in mind and then you had your bike one. So I wasn't trying to copy you.
No, it's okay. Clark, you're one.
I got a couple of good things. One is that I'm a huge Bob Odenkirk fan, and I could talk about him extensively because I followed his whole career. But his performance in Better Call Saul, a kind of a spinoff from Breaking Bad, though it kind of precedes it, has been brilliant. And now they're entering, I saw the second to last episode, and there's one more. So that's been great. And the other good thing is I think Jamie's great on the show, so I hope he can come back.
We could have Jamie as our unofficial legal correspondent.
They can make it official.
Yeah.
In a departure from...
Thank you for having me.
But in a departure from our usual goodbye, I want to thank everyone for listening, for Alex Cortez and Clark Price, and especially to Jamie Raba for coming on our show. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in next time for more of the Happy Hour. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.